We all know that owning a small business means you wear many hats, but sometimes you really need an extra pair of hands. Upwork is how good companies find great and trusted freelance talent. With more than 2 decades of experience, with the simple and ambitious goal of pioneering a better way of working, companies at every stage turn to Upwork to get things done and find more flexibility in staffing key projects and initiatives. They access a global marketplace filled with top talent in IT, web dev, marketing, and more. Posting a job on Upwork is easy. With no cost to join, you can register, browse freelancer profiles, and get help drafting a job post or even book a consultation. From there, you connect with freelancers that get you and can easily hire them and take your business to the next level. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to post your job for free and connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's UPWORK.com. Upwork.com.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham. It's Sean and Ryan behind the glass. They waved.
Hey, guys.
Ryan never waves at us.
Joel waved at us, so I wanted to.
I did.
Oh, that's what sparked the wave.
Yeah.
I gotcha. Hey, Brian's not at work again. How many days does this guy get?
It's absurd.
He's got Granado amount of PTO. He's got Yordan amount of PTO.
He's your boy, Mapes. Does that even register with you, or is that just like, he does what he does?
Yeah, I mean, as we see it in sports all the time, you know, the guys get vet days. The older you get in your career, the farther you get in your career. So
you've been here longer than he has.
All the gray in his beard and hair. You know,
so he's got more veteran. Gray.
Brian Tunsil. That's what we call him.
Less service days.
Yeah. Huh. Laramie McDonald? I don't know. Whichever one you like better.
Huh. Bad teammate like Laramie? He wouldn't help his quarterback up?
He definitely would not help me off the ground.
Yeah, I don't think he would. I don't think he would. Nick Chubb's a Houston Texan. Passed his physical, according to reports. We'll talk a lot about Nick Chubb in a moment. Mailbag Monday, NBA Finals headed to Indy, and a Yordan update all to get to. But on these Mondays, we start with the good, bad, and the ugly. And we always start with good if the Astros won a series. We start with bad if they lost the series, but they won this series, the Houston Astros did. Mm-hmm. So we begin with the good.
Yeah, look, first of all, you won the series. You won another series against, this time, a good baseball team. And I'll take that all day, every day. The fact that they played good baseball, they've been a less-than-road team. So to get that series win and play good on this road trip was fantastic for them. And I'll start with the starting pitching. I thought the starting pitching was really good. I mean, you didn't know what you were going to get out of a guy like Walter, but the fact that you got 6 innings out of him and he only gave up 2 runs, got 5 strikeouts, I'll start there and say that was really good. And then when you know that you got Hunter Brown, it's a shame Hunter didn't get the win. He pitched well enough to win, but he gave you, 5 1/3. And then Gordon looked like the guy that we've seen in terms of his stuff being able to translate and did his job as well for 5 innings. So I'll start with the starting pitching.
Yeah, pitching was good. I'm a fan of Colton Gordon. I think Colton Gordon is going to be a good pitcher for the Astros. We have to temper our expectation. He's never going to be a top half of the rotation starter. I think he's a bottom of the rotation starter, but that's valuable. Like that's something that is helpful. Maybe he can eventually develop into a number 3-esque starter, but as long as you're a rotation guy, you're a rotation guy. Hunter Brown pitched pretty good. Got into a little bit of trouble in the 6th inning, couldn't get out of the 6th inning. I do think if he's going to be like the Cy Young, one of the best starting pitchers in all of baseball, I'm going to start being disappointed whenever he doesn't get through the 6th inning. He was disappointed in himself, so I'm going to be disappointed whenever Hunter Brown can't get through 6 innings. I think that you need to be able to do that if you're going to be a frontline starter, a consistent Cy Young contender, that sort of thing. So that's the one nitpick I would have on Hunter Brown. Who blew his win? I can't remember who gave it up.
It was Dubin.
Was it Dubin?
Dubin
gave up the bomb to Ramirez.
Yep.
Which was one of my bads.
Ramirez is such a good hitter.
I love Jose Ramirez. He's one of my favorite players in baseball.
Yeah, you agree with me he's in the Hall of Fame already?
No.
Oh, I looking at the stats and just what he's been able to do in terms of as a switch hitter. And I know Burke, that's a tough conversation because Berkman should be in. But, man, he's going to be a Hall of Famer. That dude is a stick. He is unbelievable.
I did not expect this conversation. I would bet that he won't be.
Well, I forget where.
I mean, he's already 32. He has under 1,600 hits in just over 250 homers. Like, to me, you have a long way to go.
Where was I? I don't think I was in the car. But there, I forget one of the analysts was like, because I was trying to figure out, because I'm driving, I couldn't look up all the stats, but they were rattling off the stats and everything like that. And one of the, whoever the analyst was, or whoever the, one of the baseball expert was like putting him in the same category as like Eddie Murray and stuff like that. I didn't realize how good he was from both sides of the plate.
Eddie Murray? Who said this? This is awful take.
Yeah, I got to remember where I, because we were on the road all weekend. But I'm like, when you look at just the fact that he's been, what, is he a seven-time All-Star? Seven or eight?
Yeah, I don't use All-Stars.
But I know. But I'm not trying to use it as the, I get that. But he's an over 300. I think he's hit over 300 for at least 7 or 8 years in a row.
It's not my take.
I thought you had his stats pulled up.
Let's see. One, two. If he does it this year, it'd be his third year ever.
Oh, wow. Well, then they were looking at the wrong stats.
He's a career 281 hitter.
I was hearing stats, but he's just a hell of a hitter to me.
No, he's a very good player. I didn't expect the Hall of Fame conversation with Jose Ramirez. Like, if you just pull up Lance Berkman as a comp for Jose Ramirez, who Lance Berkman was left off first ballot, who was also a switch hitter. Now, to be fair to Jose Ramirez, he plays like a pretty good third base, and it's a more important defensive position than first or corner outfield like Lance played most of his career. Berkman finished with 1,900 hits. Ramirez is closing in on 1,600. So Ramirez is going to catch him in hits eventually. Mm-hmm. Lance Berkman hit 366 homers. Jose Ramirez is at 267. Like, if his career ended right now, he's not even close to a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, I just the stats that I heard, I don't know if it was on the radio or if I was watching it on my phone, but the stats that I heard were pretty impressive in terms of his overall resume. But then you watch him hit in the series, and it's like every time he comes up, he's clutch. I didn't realize how short he was either. I didn't realize when they were talking about his height that he's close to Altuve's height. But, man, he's a stick.
Is he that short?
Yeah, they said he was like 5'8", I thought.
I mean, how tall is Altuve, you think?
5'7"?
Oh, I don't think Altuve's 5'7".
5'9", maybe? No, I don't think.
I think Altuve's like 5'5". He's probably listed as taller than what he, like his Wikipedia says. Let's see, Jose Altuve. Yeah, I think that, I think Ramirez is a little bit taller than Jose Altuve. 5'6 is what Altuve's listed as. I feel like he's more like 5'5". Jose Altuve. Jose Ramirez lifted, I would guess 5'9". This conversation's so weird.
Yeah, well, we can get off of it and get back to the series if you want. I just said, because he is a hell of a hitter.
5'8", Ramirez.
Okay.
2 inches. I feel like Jose Altuve's 5'6", though. I feel like that's being very, very nice. Ramirez is definitely pudgier, though. He's a little bit fat. He's fast, too, Jose Ramirez.
I was going to say, because he's got some speed bases for a guy that can look chubby.
Yeah, he can look a little bit chubby. Looks a little Luis Garcia-y. Colton Gordon, just to pick up there, like his first career victory. So, like, hey, golf clap, Colton Gordon. Congratulations on winning your first career game. That's cool to see. And I'm a Brandon Walter fan. I like me a little Brandon Walter. Reminds me of Jamie Moyer. Gave up the two runs yesterday, that home run, which change up outside corner. Naylor knew it was coming. Hit the yanked it out when it was an outside. Really, it was on the corner. It was the outside part of the plate on the outside corner. And Naylor was able to pull it out of the ballpark to right. But I thought Colton Gordon was very good. The offense just didn't show up yesterday. Mm-mm. We'll get to the bad here in a little bit. What other good, Jeff?
Well, I think, you know, Jake Meyers continues to hit the ball 6-for-11 in the series. I don't know where it came from. I'm glad it hasn't gone away, and I like what he's doing. But, you know, from a good perspective, Yiner 4-for-8, Jake 6-for-11, and then Pena 4-for-14. But those guys were pretty big throughout when they needed hits, so I'll go there.
I never want to see Jeremy Pena DH again. He looked lost at the plate yesterday.
Yeah, he was 0-for-4 yesterday.
How many punches did he have? I think at least two.
I don't have it up.
He looked like he wanted zero part of DHing yesterday.
But yeah, that kind of goes to that when we were having the Jordan. It always comes up with Jordan, and I said I think it was DeRosa and somebody else were talking about it on MLB. About the fact that some guys DHing is the worst thing that they can do because it's just so tough for them to stay engaged in the game when they just have four at bats in a game.
I feel like that's like speaks to Pena too, because Pena is like so focal on the defensive. Every shortstop is very focal on the defensive side of things. But, yeah, it seems like he was a little bit lost at the plate. I didn't really care about a spot his lineup yesterday. And, like, they've already guaranteed the road trip. They already guaranteed the series. They had that weird travel Thursday into Friday. I didn't care that they mailed that game in yesterday. It was kind of annoying, though, that they tied the game and then gave it up late. Any other goods?
I mean, the back of the bullpen, Abreu, you got one appearance. Hader, you had a hold and a save, but those guys continue to keep doing what they're doing, and they could be all-stars the way they're playing, the way they're pitching in the back side of the bullpen.
I took a deep dive into some of the numbers for the Astros today. To the Myers point, like, Myers' home road splits are insane. Like, he's really good on the road, has been kind of average at home, which is weird because Minute Maid's a neutral offensive ballpark, but it's a home run offensive ballpark. Just weird that he's way better on the road than he is at home, which is kind of fluky. Hader might be the most, I shouldn't say the most, that's a very, very specific term. He's one of the most difficult pitchers to hit in all of baseball this year. Josh Hader's been absolutely nasty, been filthy. Abreu's been pretty good, too. The underrated guy's been Oker. How about the job that Oker did coming in for Hunter Brown? Preserved at the time Hunter Brown's opportunity to win the game. Oker came in with a bases-loaded one-out situation and got out of it unscathed. That was really nice to see. I'm a big fan of Steven Oker. Good pitcher. And they found him, like, I mean, it's another one of Dana Brown's finds, where it's a 4A type of pitcher, is bounced around, journeyman, and it seems like Dana has this, like, affinity to find two or so of those guys every single year. Did it with Taylor Scott last year, and then he DFAs him. Found Brian King. He found Steven Oker. He found Caleb Ort. Yeah. Like, thank you. Yeah, so, like, he's really good at being able to do that for whatever reason.
Yeah, no, and, you know, he had the bad throw yesterday. It's unfortunate, and it puts you in a bind in a game in the seventh inning that essentially when that happened, you kind of looked at it and went, well, I think this game's out of reach. But I tend to agree with you on the fact that I didn't expect them to take the first two games in the series, especially getting into town late. But because Cleveland had been playing decent baseball, I mean, I think they're a better hitting lineup than the teams we've seen with the Pirates and some of the teams that they've played when – and the A's and teams were like, well, he did that, but he did that against. And I think that their lineup is decent. And so to get two out of three in Cleveland already, I wasn't sure what he was going to do yesterday, but I'll take it.
Yeah, it was a massive series victory. And the Mariners are kind of losing, too. You build a 2.5-game lead in the division. You're only 3.5 back out of the number two seed in the American League, which is something that I'm monitoring.
Yeah, no, I'm watching. Look, I'm more closely than before. I still always root against the Yankees, but when they're on Sunday Night Baseball all the time, you can't help but hope that they lose because the Red Sox are like 9 out now. So I've written them off once Bregman got hurt, but I'd like to see the Yankees lose. I'd like to see the Tigers lose. Tigers got a big series win against the Cubs. Tigers aren't going anywhere. They're pretty damn good, too.
Cubs will be completely useless by September. That's why Kyle Tucker planned his wedding in September. Planned his wedding instead of the playoffs.
Okay.
Right. He's already married. It's a joke. Jacob Melton had that diving. What's wrong? I was being sarcastic.
Oh, I know.
My humor.
Oh, I know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Why is my sarcasm already bothering you?
Let's just go.
Jacob Melton had a fantastic catch. The catch probability on that catch was only 45%, by the way.
It was the anti-Altuve?
What do you mean?
On the one that he slid into the left field line.
We're
for.
Saving the bad and the ugly.
I understand that, but there. That was pretty bad.
Yeah.
Look, I was disappointed with Jacob Melton at the plate because, you know, I got excited with the bat that he had against Skeens, and then he got a couple ribbies, he got a knock or two, and I thought, well, maybe this is a kid that looks like he can jump in and be the answer they need as a left-handed bat that can play good outfield, and the defense was there, the offense wasn't, he was 0 for the weekend.
Yeah, he's also struck out a ton.
Mm-hmm. Which, coming in, he was known for.
Yeah. I don't love what I've seen offensively from Melton. But that was a fantastic play. The catch probabilities don't factor in for the wall. So it's a more difficult play than, like, that metric really defines, I think. Dubon had that, it was Friday, where he gunned back-to-back runners in the first inning. You had the two-hole hitter try to take second base. I can't remember if he was in leadoff for two-hole, but whatever. He threw him out at second base trying to stretch a single into a double, and then Jose Ramirez tried to stretch a single into a double, and Dubon threw both of them out in the same inning. I'm not sure I remember a time that I've ever seen that in my life.
No, that was unbelievable. I mean, the fact that you get one put out in an inning is something. Two in the first inning was pretty crazy, but look, we know that, hey, at least he's no Chaz McCormick. He's got an arm out there, and the fact that he made the plays quickly, too. He attacked on both plays and made good throws. That was fun to watch in the first inning because that could have set the table for a different outcome at the end of the day.
Final good that I have might come as a surprise because he didn't have a productive week based on like normal metrics. I kind of like what I'm seeing from Christian Walker. Christian Walker is hitting the ball hard. Line out, line out, line out. You look at some of like the exit velos, like who cares about exit velos? Give me exit hits, which is true. That's fine. I'm okay with that. But the dude is starting to hit the ball hard all over the place. I think a breakout is coming with Christian Walker. I know he didn't have a good weekend, but I like what I saw. I think we're about to see the summer of Christian Walker.
I hope you're right. Because I keep waiting for him to get on this hot streak, and everybody keeps saying he's going to be okay. And I don't look like I don't see a guy on a night by night basis that looks overmatched. I just hope that we start seeing some of the results that everybody says is right around the corner.
Swinging. I wouldn't say a hot bat. He's not getting hits, but he's hitting the ball hard. He's swinging hard too. He's getting it upwards to like almost 80 miles per hour on the swings.
Okay. I mean, whatever works. I just need to start getting some hits.
All right. You have any other goods?
I think that's it.
Lots to get to today. Shrouded in mystery. What are we shrouded in mystery in today? NBA Finals Game 2. Nick Chubb is a Houston Texan. Mailbag Monday. You're on update as well. 713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line. We're on YouTube at ESPN Houston. Blankers at Pac-Man Joel. I'm at Jeremy Branham. We are the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Good, bad, ugly from the Astros weekend. 713-780-ESPN. Texter says from his own mouth, Altuve's only 5'5". Yeah, I don't believe he's 5'6". Like, I have a tough time believing that. But I've been wrong before. Who is better, Gwynn or Biggio? I have to look into it. Okay, I'll take Bagwell offensively, though. Texter Ramirez will end up in the Hall of Fame. He has a 55 career WAR. He'll finish well above 60. His OPS plus is awesome too. He might end up in the Hall of Fame, but he's certainly not a Hall of Famer today. If his season would retire, or if he retired today, 713-780-ESPN. Texter Paul took a shot at y'all today. You're gonna have to provide some context. I have no idea what he said. Mapes, any idea what Paul might have said about the Killer Bee Blankers? Do you have any idea?
I don't.
I didn't
might have been
catch the show today.
Might have been about Altuve related because we're talking about how some people. There seems to be, I believe the phrase was anti-Altuve rhetoric on Astros Twitter from time to time as he's kind of showing his age and learning a new position. And he said he'll leave that to the Killer Bees. He'll leave the anti-Altuve rhetoric to the Killer Bees.
Is that like when Ball acts his age and learns a new sport like baseball?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, because I think that he's still learning. He just doesn't like that we know.
Yeah. I would like some context there. I guess it was that. I feel like I'm fair with Altuve. I was in favor of Altuve moving to left field because I know how bad of a defender he is these days, and I feel like left field is less important than second base.
Oh, and you said that.
Depending on who the starter is. I've also kind of criticized Altuve's regression as well. So, that's probably a fair rhetoric. 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line. Let's go out to the HRP listener line. Travis is in the Hive. What's up, Travis?
Hey, gentlemen, how y'all doing?
Great.
What's up, Travis?
Hey, man, I was at Pittsburgh and Cleveland for both series, man. I tell you what, Pittsburgh Stadium is absolutely gorgeous. Any fan that wants to go to an away game, Pittsburgh's a great stadium. The only thing that sucks about Pittsburgh, I'm sure they do that to save money so they can collect the balls, is they don't open the stadium until an hour before the game. So you don't get to go to watch the batting practice and catch home run balls.
Huh.
I don't know if y'all knew that.
No, I did not know that. I've never been there, but I have heard the as you just reported. Most people say it's one of the most
gorgeous.
Beautiful
the funny thing
in the
is the Texans or the Astros fans outnumbered the Pittsburgh fans most of the time. It was great. We stuck through our first rainout, which was pretty cool. Sat in the outfield and drank beer for 3 hours until the game started. Didn't get out of there till after midnight. That was awesome. I tell you what, I cannot believe how many people still hate Jose Altuve. The fans in Cleveland, I don't know if you guys heard it on the TV, but, I mean, it was loud. They were yelling at him from the left field bleachers when he was out there. Hey, it was man, they do not like him. That's for sure. Man, I highly recommend people going out to away games. That was my first time going to away game like we did. My best friend and I decided to go and have a good time. And man, that was fun. We had a great time.
It's good stuff, Travis. Thank you for calling in. Went out to the ball game. It's pretty cool.
Road trip, right?
Yeah, it's cool stuff. It's cool stuff. You think he drove to Pittsburgh?
No, I think, and I don't know if this was Travis or not, but I believe what I heard on the radio was that this was one of the trips where once a year they open it up to season ticket holders where they charter a plane, the Astros charter a plane for their season ticket holders if they want to purchase the package to go see the Astros on the road. Maybe that was part of the deal.
I vaguely heard something like that too, but I don't remember the details. I've never been to that ballpark, but I've heard it's very eloquent. It looks pretty from TV. I've heard great things.
Yeah, I mean, growing up and having never been to Pittsburgh, you hear the Steel City, blue collar, a lot of factories and things like that. But you see the stadium on TV, and everybody that I've talked to said, like, the setting right on the river and everything about it is beautiful.
Yeah. 713-780-ESPN, HRNP listener line from Rackham Pete. Israel is lurking near the phone, ready to talk. Kill a Cam. Did have the big two RBI single yesterday that tied it up. I can't believe he hasn't hit for any power. He's hit the ball hard several times. Like, he had to fly out to the a fly out to deep center in the ninth inning yesterday. He hit the ball hard. It must have been yesterday, because yesterday was the only game that he started in because he got sick on Friday.
That's right. Yeah, he had
The counting numbers just aren't there, really.
Yeah, he didn't have an at bat Saturday. Didn't play Friday. So, yeah, yesterday he was 1-for-4.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you look at the kid and you see him, and then even in spring training, because he got off to such a hot start in spring training hitting home run balls, it's an obvious assumption to make that he should have all kinds of power numbers. And, he's got doubles. But, yeah, I'm surprised with one game he had the two bombs in it, too. So, yeah, it's a little bit surprising that he hasn't shown better power numbers. But I love the way he plays the outfield for a guy that's just been thrown out there, that he seems to be getting better on that regard. And that was a big hit yesterday.
Yeah, double yesterday. Thank you, Vermont. He hasn't homered since the two home run game. And that was, that's been over a month and a half ago now. He does hit the ball hard, though. Like, he hits it with authority at times. But the extra base hits just haven't been there. It's weird.
And the question becomes then, is that going to be a career-long thing? Is that just getting settled in?
If I had to bet on his career, I think he's going to slug. Because he just hits the ball too hard not to.
He does like to go the other way. He does, and he's good at doing it, it seems like. He's got a knack for being able to do it. But, yeah, just surely by appearance alone and the way that his swings are, I believe that he's got power in him for the long haul.
Yeah, I don't know how much going the other way would help the overall slug. Like, I think it's good for a hitter to be able to hit it to all fields, but like...
No, I'm saying that might hurt. Like, the fact that if he's going to be more of an average hit, hit for average, not an average hitter, but a guy that hits for average, goes the other way with two strikes, can take a ball to right field, is that a guy that's going to be swinging for the fences?
See, I think he's a guy that can hit the ball out of the park the other way, though. Like, he is... Like, you look at some of the exit velocities the Astros have had, their top exit velocities, they belong to Cam Smith. Like, he hits the ball hard with authority, and he hits the ball hard to authority, like, at all places. I think he's hitting the top half of the baseball, which I don't think is like a concern. Like, you're not going to be like, hey, Cam, stop hitting the top half of the baseball. But I think with time and big league at bats that he will start to slug. He just hadn't slugged this year. You're looking at a 365 slug. That's not wonderful. That's okay.
No, and I'm going to chalk a lot of this up to, everything with all the firsts that are going with him in the first year in the big leagues and how he rushed through to get there. And I hope that it gets better and it improves. But he looks like a true major league hitter, and I believe he's going to continue to get better.
Zach DiZinzo has more slug than Cam Smith this year. Victor Caratini, more slug. Jake Myers, more slug than Cam Smith this year.
Okay. And those are all believable simply because those guys – they stand out.
Myers is tough to believe for me.
But for this year, because he stood out as being one of their better hitters this year. He continues to keep racking games that I didn't expect to see. So I guess that's probably where, because I've been the guy that's been the anti-Jake guy, that the fact that Jake's playing so well, it's hard for me not to notice.
I would just chalk it up to youth. I have no, I don't have any hesitations of Cam Smith being able to hit the ball with power. In his career, Israel texting in 1.1 WAR, three homers, just as many as the Vets. There he is. We knew that Israel was lurking. It's Travis. My best friends and I flew. Didn't do the Astros package, but we talked to people that have, and they enjoyed it. There you go. So you're right. 713-780-ESPN. Let's get to the bad of the Astros weekend. Do not ignore in victory what you wouldn't in defeat. 713-780-3776. And a valid Lance McCullers concern? It is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. But first, a minute on Pro Dunk Hoops. They make the highest quality basketball goals you'll find. They're great. They're the best. They're like the true, authentic goals that you see at the pro, the college gyms. They have the tempered glass backboard, gives you a true, authentic, sincere feel. Thick steel pole, which is must have for your basketball goals. Stainless steel hardware. It's rust proof. Breakaway rim. Height adjustable. It's fantastic. You can lower it all the way down to 5 feet, raise it all the way up to 10. And with their new goal, Thor, you can raise and lower the goals with a drill. Easy to do, fun to do, and you can get it from 5 to 10 feet in a matter of seconds. Lightning Adjust features what they call it, and it's idiot-proof for people like me. Their accessories are top-notch. You get LED light kits for night play. You're at work. Kids are at school. It's only cool at night. Totally understand. Get the LED light kits. That way you can play throughout the night, all around the clock. Backstop nets. You don't have to waste your time chasing after the basketball. Pole pad lettering to customize your goal, make it look cool and fun, and lots more. And you can order all of this, including professional installation, online at ProDunk.com. That's right. The pros will professionally install your goal. They're not going to just deliver this, you know, millions of pieces to your driveway and be like, hey, here you go. No, they're going to do it for you. The pros will professionally install your goal at the perfect height, perfectly straight. You don't do it. Let the pros at ProDunk do the work for you. That way you don't mess it up. Give them a call at 281-351-9822 and visit ProDunk.com. That's ProDunk.com.
ESPN 97.5. Coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
780 ESPN, HRNP listener line. Get to the Astros bad here in a moment. Israel arguing with it. Some vets have three homers. How many do you expect from the 8th, 9th hitter in the lineup? Stop hating. That's ridiculous. No one's comparing Cam Smith to the best players in the Astros. It's not what we're doing. We're just talking about his trajectory and where he's at as a player, Israel. Don't be so sensitive.
Well, if Jeremy Branham says so, I guess Cam Smith is ass. So.
Don't be so sensitive. Can you explain what slug is? It's kind of, what is it, total bases divided by at-bats? I think it is, or it might be plate appearances, but whatever. It takes a, for every single is one, for every double is two, for every triple is three, for every homer is four. That's total bases, and then you divide it by at bats or plate appearances. I can't remember which one, and that gets a player's slugging percentage. So it gives you an idea of who hits for power and stuff like that. 713-780-ESPN. What do you have for the bad?
Overall, the production of the offense still isn't what I'd like to see. You know, we talked about Walker barreling balls but not getting hits. But when you look at it, and Altuve was 2 for 10, you know, and he was okay. I like Paredes for the most part, but he didn't have the best weekend either. And then, you know, a lot of the guys that you saw some signs of melting, he didn't do anything. You looked at Caratini, he was 0 for the weekend. Rogers played, did have the home run, but that was his only hit. So, I mean, for the most part, offensively, I would like to have seen more. But when you win 2 out of 3, I'm not going to complain too much about it.
Forrest Whitley, first one at the top of my list. Astros DFAing Forrest Whitley. The promise, the prospect, the potential that the Astros thought they had with Forrest Whitley, even as soon as like spring training, as recently as spring training, is gone. Well, I guess I shouldn't say it's official, because there is an outside chance that someone wouldn't pick him up off of waivers, and then the Astros could designate him for assignment, which is what they did. But they could assign him to Sugarland. I'm of the belief that somebody's going to take a flyer on Forrest Whitley. Like, some of these really bad teams in baseball, why wouldn't you? Like, if you're really bad and you need some help in your bullpen, it's like, okay, well, you could not only claim Forrest Whitley, but then you have 6 years of club control for an arm that is pretty talented. So I would be stunned if Forrest Whitley clears waivers. I think his time with the Astros is officially over. We'll find out in the coming days if anybody actually does claim him. But I guess it did turn out to be a myth for the Astros as far as they're concerned.
I mean, you know, with all the expectation, and at one point he was the number one prospect in the organization, and everybody knew that he had a live fastball and a live arm, and it seemed like his entire career in the Houston organization was a car wreck, because every time that, you know, you wanted to believe that he was close or he was going to be doing something that could contribute to the big league ball club, whether it be injury or other, he just got derailed and out of options and out of time, and they had to make a tough decision. And I'm with you. I believe that, you know, we saw his fastball, and we were talking about it in the leading into the season in spring training, that there looked like there would be a really legit chance for him to be in the middle of this bullpen this year.
Yeah.
And then we saw him the last couple appearances, and he didn't look like a major league pitcher.
No, he didn't. And with him being out of options and the Astros don't want to send down somebody else and then going to the six-man rotation, he truly was the odd man out. Like, I don't think that the Astros had any choice. And then it also, like, how important is your lowest leverage reliever to your big league team? Like, we just talked about all the success that Dana Brown has had in finding these relievers, right? Like, he found Brian King. He found Caleb Ort. He found Stephen Okert. Like, all of these guys are having really good success where it's proven that you're, like, I don't want to say these relievers are a dime a dozen, but the way that Dana Brown's been able to find these middle relievers and, like, these middle to low leverage relievers, it does make players that are out of options really expandable. Like, it's why Taylor Scott's no longer with the Astros either. Like, you're either good, you help this bullpen, and if you don't have options and you're not, well, then Dana Brown's going to let you go, and he's going to find the next guy. Like, the Astros bullpen in the middle has as much turnover as, like, a bad restaurant's waitstaff. But Dana Brown finds gems, so it makes a Forrest Whitley less important to keep him around.
Plus, it's so easy because you're not talking about big money, long-term, big-time deals that are handcuffing you. You're like, okay, well, you know, we got a whole lot more than we expected and a good return on the investment there. But if his time is over, it's not real painful to say we're going to walk away and find somebody else and give somebody else a shot.
Yeah. So the easy decision there, a little painful to see it happen because he is somebody who had tremendous potential, just never lived up to it. Stephen Okert, as good as he's been on the mound, he's awful at fielding bunts. That play that he had late in the game yesterday where Cleveland's trying to move the runners over, Okert trying to took his sweet time, has all the time in the world, and threw a fall-off-the-table slider to Shea Whitcomb at first base. They got loose. Like, I don't think it was the outcome of the game. Cleveland scores there. Astros don't score. Cleveland still wins it. But still painful to see a big league pitcher unable to just field a normal, traditional, easy sacrifice bunt. I went and screen-grabbed when Okert picked it up, and then when he threw it to first base, I forget who the hitter was, but he was like halfway up the baseline when Okert was already turning to throw and still found a way to throw it away.
Yeah, no, I happened to be watching the end of the game at a restaurant and looked up to, you know, seeing the comeback, felt good about it. Hey, 3 innings to play, tie ball game, all you can ask for. And then when he threw it away, I'm like, that no matter what, that seems like that's the ball game, and that sucked. So yeah, that was a tough one to swallow. That was on my list as well.
Where'd you eat?
It was a place in Katy because we had the tournament out that way.
Just mediocre? Or?
Yeah, it wasn't great.
I'm not going to mention it.
It wasn't great. But they had a big kids area and arcade, so all the kids were basically not something. We'd have to watch them as much. They were able to play games.
The Astros won the extra inning game, but I'm not a fan of Joe Espada going with the sacrifice bunt with a runner at second, nobody out. He tried to bunt him over with Dubon. Dubon popped it up, and then, you know, he got bailed out later with a wild pitch and then an Isak Paredes opposite field base hit. I don't like playing for one run really ever. The only time I like playing for one run's late in the game if you're at home or with a lead and you're tacking on to a lead. I especially don't like the Manfred man extra innings. You're the visiting team and you're playing for one. I'll never be in favor of that.
No, I understand. You and I have talked about that before. I get it because I think, especially at home too, I just feel like, you know, you're not playing for one. I think at all costs you should be trying. You obviously want to get the first one across, but you got to give yourself a chance to try and get more than that. They got lucky in a lot of ways because Paredes went the other way and got that ball to paint the line. But I would agree with you more times than not. I don't agree in the sacrifice there. And I think that, you know, one knock and three chances to do it is a pretty good chance to not only get that run in, but also keep something going. So I get it.
You mentioned the Dubin home run that he gave up to Ramirez. Do you think he should have been pitching to Ramirez there?
I'm trying to think of when he came in the game. Was I a bit surprised that he went to Dubin? Yes.
No, were you surprised that they were pitching to Ramirez? That they're actually challenged
every time they pitch to Ramirez, I feel like he's going to kill them. So I didn't, to be honest with you, I didn't think about putting him on. But at the same time, I do have fear as an Astros fan every time he comes to the plate that he's doing damage.
I saw a lot of discourse going on that they shouldn't have pitched to Jose Ramirez in that spot. I'm with you, though. Like, in the moment, I didn't really, like, I really wasn't banging the table one way or the other. So I didn't really care too much that they pitched to him, but I mean, hindsight 2020, like, it makes some sense. But if they would have put him on, I would have had no issue with it anyways. Or, you know, I was on the fence when it came to pitching to Ramirez there. And, like, the worst thing that he could do was tie the game. Mm-hmm. Now, he did tie the game, and he put it, like, in that perfect sliver, too, but, like, to the left of the extended wall. So that kind of stunk. How about Jose Altuve getting into a rundown the other day? Or lack of getting into a rundown.
Looking in front of him, it drove me absolutely bonkers. He doesn't know there's a runner in front, or he's not looking at the runner in front of him to realize the runner may not go.
Here was the legend, Cleveland Guardian legend, Frick Award winner, going into the Hall of Fame. Everybody on planet Earth knows who Tom Hamilton is, and here was Tom Hamilton describing that play the other day.
42 Houston here in the ninth. Swung on, lifted in the air, not deep, in right, coming hard. Noel, he'll make the catch. Paredes will not tag. Now they got a runner caught between second and third. It's Altuve. He's running them out of the inning, and the tag is made on him by Santana as Altuve just stood there. Instead of getting in the rundown between second and third, he let Santana run all the way over and tag him out. That's unbelievable. Thank you.
Thank you. I like that part of the end. Thank you.
Yeah, it absolutely drove me bonkers as well, just watching the whole play unfold like that and the fact that, you know, he didn't make a whole heck of a lot of effort after he knew that he was had.
Do you put more blame on Altuve or Paris Chica or Paredes?
I put it on Altuve. You have to pay attention to the runner in front of you. Yeah, it looks like a situation where he's going to tag and go. But, I mean, you're taught as a runner, you have to play off what happens in front of you.
That's so bad. I understand the Paris Chica should have sent Isak. Like, okay, I can listen to that. But you're 100% right. Like, you're looking at the base in front of you. Yep. You should be looking at the base runner in front of you to get out 45 feet without realizing that the base runner that's standing on the base you're going to hasn't taken off is...
I mean,
we
teach kids that. Like, now be aware you got someone in front of you. You got to play off of what they do. And then and the announcer wasn't wrong in the fact that then he makes no effort at all. He just plays freeze tag. He freezes and he's like, okay, come tag me. I'm not even going to try and, you know, work this thing out to try and get in a rundown or something and see if maybe Paredes can try and sneak down the line or at least draw a throw that goes awry. He just gave up.
See, that's something that bothered me. It's like, get in the rundown, man. Like, let's see if you could, like, at minimum, they're a win. Like, I understand it's a terrible situation. You're probably going to get the third out. You're not going to score a run. That's going to happen 95% of the time in that spot, maybe 99% of that time. But at least get in the rundown to try to survive it long enough to give Isak a chance or at least draw a throw to the plate to see if they could throw Isak out. I was disappointed with the effort there.
It was like a Devers-type play, right? If you saw the Devers play again last night where he's got a chance to beat out a ball and he just pulls the chute and just basically gives up on it. It's like, at least show me some effort to at least cover up for all. You should be embarrassed in the fact that you ran them out of a potential for a run or to get a run there. Mm-hmm. At least give me the effort to try and make something out of nothing.
Yeah, that was disappointing. He just stood there, frozen. Like, it was so bizarre. Survive the rundown a little bit, Jose Altuve. Come on. There was a lot of people on the internet that were defending his honor.
How?
I just feel like those type of people are going to defend Jose Altuve no matter what.
It.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's a certain level of fan that will not let realism come into play because they love the player so much.
Yeah, from the standpoint of the, you know, I have his back at all times. I get it, but I don't, because as a baseball decision, I don't know how you can defend that.
Yeah, I don't either. And then Cleveland got mad at me because I didn't know who Tom Hamilton was, and there was a Cleveland fan that posted my address on the internet again. He got the wrong address, though. It was one that I lived in, like, in middle school. And he was trying to put the first six digits of my phone number, and he couldn't – he got those wrong both times.
He was trying to find your phone number?
Oh, yeah, he tried. He found one of my old phone numbers that I think was my old, like, house phone number, like again, when I was in middle school, like, five houses ago. But, yeah, he was, like, putting the first six digits trying to, like, spook me.
That's
I made him mad.
That's over the top.
I see, Blanker's not just you that I make mad. I make people in Cleveland mad that I've never met before.
Did he try and find your high school stats or anything?
No.
Okay. I didn't go that far, right? I mean, I
gladly post my high school stats. Yeah. I was a 400 hitter in high school. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. 2 for 5. People just couldn't get me out. I was like Aaron Judge. I was posting batting average, at least. Aaron Judge like numbers.
I didn't realize how much of a tear he's on these days, but watching him last night with the two bombs, and then every time they put the graphic up with his numbers, he's pretty damn impressive.
One more on Altuve, that Kwan Bloop double that dropped in was a 95% catch probability. Jose Altuve couldn't get to a 95% catch probability ball.
He looked like a kid that was running up to a swimming pool and didn't know if he was going to dive in or just like kind of jump over the edge and drop down. And then at the last minute, just kind of like went in between and was flailing all over on the grass. I was like, what was that?
Yeah, that was maybe one of the worst jumps I've ever seen in left field. I'm not being hyperbolic. Anything else? Any bads?
No.
Astros social media let a milestone pass a week or so ago, but I wanted to congratulate Joe Espada on his 100th career loss. Great start to his managerial career. That's a nice recall there, Texter, because we were given some Astros grief for whenever Espada won his 100th, and they acted like he won his 1,000th. They acted like they won a World Series. They were trying to plan the parade when Joe Espada won his 100th game as a manager. All right, 713-780-ESPN. I want to take a listen back to a Dell promo video from last week that I think all of you are going to love. Also, Blanker's got a question about Lance McCullers. It is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
So all of you are familiar. We all get like show promos throughout the week to go on social. I don't really know the science behind it. But, like, you know, John and Lance will have one. They'll post it. We'll have one. They post it. Dell has one. They post it. Paul has one. They post it. We know the game, right? You see it on Facebook, social, Insta, Twitter, now TikTok, which you can watch us there. And you can follow me at Jeremy J. Branham. But here was the Dell show promo from last week.
He's on one of the top three teams right now in the American League. He's the best player, at least position player, on said team. He probably does deserve to be in the conversation, honestly. I mean, there are guys who, yes, are going to be in front of him. It's going to be hard to beat Aaron Judge at this point. It just feels like him and Ohtani are going to win this thing every single year in the American League and National League, unless you do something absolutely dramatic. But, I mean, I would put Peña. I think he's fitting to be at least in the conversation right now with how he's playing and how much he's meant to the Astros. Like, you talk about the actual definition, most valuable player. Since he moved to the leadoff spot, he's been one of those valuable players in baseball, probably.
What did you notice about that Del Olalea show promo?
He's smoking a pack and a half a day.
What's the why is Joe taking up the entire Del Olalea show
exactly.
video?
Yeah.
What is going? What is
I'm
up
like,
with that?
A Del promo. You're telling me Del promo, and all I hear was a voice that's got some gravel to it. That is Joe George.
It's the second time that Joe's hijacked the Del Olalea show video promo deal in the last month or so. Like, every time he produces Del's show, it's Joe on the Del Olalea video. They tag Del. Del doesn't say a word in the video. Why are you even tagging Del?
They tag Del?
Yeah.
Oh, come on, man.
They tag Del in this deal.
That's crazy.
Joe produces and is hijacking the talent's show video. It annoys me.
He hosts and is the lead on Inside the Icebox.
That's fine by me. I don't want to lead a show.
No,
leading
saying,
a show is
the way
way
the
more
promos,
hard.
The way the promos run.
I don't care about that.
You brought it up.
Well, it's funny.
Right. I don't sincerely care about it. He led with it.
But it's like, yeah, this was the tweet. Is Jeremy Peña becoming the Astros' next MVP and All-Star? At Dell, at Joe George Radio. Joe doesn't have a show. He doesn't have a show. Why is he getting a show video whenever he's producing for Dell? It's a hijack.
Seems like Joe's making the decisions around here.
This is a misuse of authority, is what this is. I will not stand for this. I'm a believer in justice. shouldn't have an entire video of a producer, no offense producers, but you shouldn't have an entire video of the producers on somebody else's show, especially when you're not the full-time producer of said show. Sean, have you ever had a 60-second video of a take that you had whenever you're in for whenever you're working with Dell as the full-time producer of the Dell Olalea show?
No, I think the only time I've ever on a promo video is like at the end.
Yeah.
Or maybe I ask a question to set it up and then it's the host.
This is...
Or it's the host and then now, I finish.
Is he on the bullpen anymore?
Dell or Joe?
Joe?
No.
This is a miscarriage of justice.
Mm-hmm.
This is a use of authority that should not be used here at ESPN 97.5. Dell Olalea gets one or two videos a week, and last week, 60 seconds of Joe George. I don't know why they tagged him. That annoys me maybe with another thing. Like, here's Joe, here's a take that he had. Okay, but it's during Dell's show, and it tagged Dell. That's insulting to Dell. It's a slap in Dell's face.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I mean, I think it really comes down to if Dell's upset about it or not. But
I'm upset for Dell.
But if it is a Dell show promo, it should be Dell.
I don't think Dell is going to care enough. Like, I don't think Dell really gets worked up about that sort of thing. But I want to stand up for Dell because you have a white producer coming in, and all of a sudden the whole video is with Joe George. It's insulting.
You want answers.
You think Israel's getting involved in this if he knew all the details?
I would hope. Israel should stand up for this. All right, what's your question about Lance McCullers?
No, I mean, I put it on the rundown just as a discussion point. But to me, when I heard, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, as I know you will, when I hear Lance McCullers is being pushed back and that the two extra days, they're giving him the two extra days and starting at home instead of Sunday in Cleveland, I understand that's something that happens in baseball. I understand that that's something that you can do. But to me, I cringe a little bit and I start to worry because of the fact that we've been down this road too many times to where I get a little bit extra concerned about, yeah, you're going to tell me he's okay. But again, the things you tell me aren't always true as an organization either. So when I hear that, I'm like, okay, this is kind of where I was at when I said I needed to see him pitch in multiple games and start to have success and all the things he's starting to do. But now all of a sudden with two good games in a row, when they push him back 2 days, I'm like, I can't help but in the back of my mind start thinking, is he really okay? Is this really just precautionary? Because we've been through too much.
Yeah, I don't think the concern in the back of your mind's valid in this case. And it's more about the action because I'm with you on their words. Like, their words are meaningless at this point. But they announced Lance McCullers as Tuesday starter. So, okay. Like, I think if they announce him as a starter, he's going to start. But then also you wouldn't have DFA'd Forrest Whitley. Like, if, oh, we're worried about Lance McCullers being available to start Tuesday's game, well, then you would have just placed Lance on the IL and not have to DFA Forrest Whitley. So the actions, and then also, like, they've talked about going to a six-man rotation. Like, Espada was asked yesterday, are you going to a six-man rotation? I believe we're going to go to a six-man rotation because they have 13 games in a row. So, like, Espada saying they're going six-man. They needed room on the roster for Brandon Walter, and they DFA'd Forrest Whitley when, if this theory held water, they would have just placed Lance on the IL.
Yeah, but the Forrest Whitley part of it, I understand it would because you need all the arms in your bullpen that you could possibly have. But to me, it's not like I was thinking he wasn't going to pitch Tuesday either. It's just that I start worrying about, is he already feeling some things? Is there already something there where, not that it's all the way broken or wrong, but is there something going on already? Because I can't help but think down that route.
Yeah, I think if there was anything going on with Lance McCullers, they would place him on the IL.
Okay.
All right. And I don't think they would DFA a promising pitcher. Not that Forrest Whitley carries tremendous value, but if you're like, okay, we have to bump Lance from Sunday to Tuesday, and plus, like, the day off, I think that Lance would have pitched today if he didn't have a day off. But you had the day off, so okay, we're not going to pitch you Sunday. We're going to go ahead and start the six-man rotation. This allows you an extra day. Oh, we have an off day. Okay, now you get two extra days whenever you're recovering and coming back from, you know, a major elbow surgery, 2.5 years. I think all the actions show that Lance is fine. Like, he's been announced the starter. A spot has talked about six-man rotation. And to create room for Brandon Walter on the roster instead of just placing Lance, if something was, like, bugging him, you DFA'd Forrest Whitley, who is a promising pitcher. Certainly hasn't produced. But, no, I think your fears here are in the back of your head aren't valid in this case.
That's fine.
But Lance always scares me.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think that I'm not going to apologize for having that extra bit of concern just simply because of what we've been through.
No, one's asking for forgiveness.
Yeah, I just felt like the minute I heard that, it was an oblique moment right away. Like, oh God, like, you know, you start feeding me all the positivity because I need it right now because we've been down this road too many times.
Yeah. Don't you think that they would have placed him on the IL?
No, because there's times that, you know, you look at guys that are saying, yeah, I'm still a little sore, or yeah, I'm still a little tight, or whatever. And, you know, I threw a little too many pitches or did more maybe early on, that you can still give him a day or two, but still believe you're still going to put him back out there because there's nothing structurally wrong with the arm, or you know, I don't know, because I don't know how many times that they're going to actually do imaging. But I'm not saying that it was something that would have forced them to do imaging, but if he's still feeling a little extra, a little sore or a little bit more, that you shut him down, you give him an extra day or so, but that doesn't mean you just absolutely aren't going to start him on their next game.
Yeah. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Nick Chubb, a Houston Texan. What is realistic expectation for Nick Chubb? Who is the odd man out? And any signs of concern with this news? 713-780-ESPN. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
We're taking a break.
Okay. That's cool.